Thank you. I couldn't help but reflect when I was sitting there and Carolyn opened with the story of the small child asking, "What is that man for?" That actually I was sitting there having no connection with this piece of research whatsoever and sitting on the platform thinking, what the hell am I here for? And funnily enough, I'm not sure that anybody's necessarily briefed me, so Naomi, forgive me, I don't know what I'm meant to do at this point, but let me just reflect. I think what I'm meant to do, if I'm right, is to reflect from a practitioner point of view why this stuff is important. Thank you. Yes, that's what I thought I was here to do, which is helpful.
Or not.
Forgive me, I've got no hangover this morning, so I'm not really used to speaking like this. I'm a bit nervous because I was under strict instructions from some of my staff last night to stay sober, which I've achieved. Now, that gives me actually some very mixed feelings about the next 10 minutes, because if I perform reasonably well, that might give them the false impression that actually every time I've got to stay sober, which is going to is going to really make these sort of conferences a real trial for me. This stuff is actually fantastically useful for me, and I'd like maybe just from a perspective as a practitioner, as somebody who is charged with the responsibility for doing this, to explain why in the context of my scheme, and I hope maybe there's some stuff there that colleagues in the room might identify with. At the Legal Ombudsman, a couple of things are going on for us which make this particularly relevant. First of all, we have our statutory jurisdiction, which is set in stone, and lawyers have no choice, they have to buy into it. Yep. We're about to pick up claims management companies. Again, they will have no choice. They will have to buy into it. They will have to pay whatever we cost. But in the world that is to come, we will actually, and I suspect Steve Brooker may talk about this later on this afternoon, we may have to adopt a slightly more entrepreneurial approach and go to sell our services in a wider market. There's a particular example of that. We have will writers, unregulated will writers who provide legal services in the broadest sense, where there is considerable consumer detriment, and it is possible for us to offer them access to our scheme under a voluntary arrangement. The obstacle to that, other than forcing the MOJ actually to get its act together to set up the voluntary scheme, is one of price. My unit costs, although they're coming down quite rapidly, nevertheless, are well above £1,000 per case that goes into the scheme. The will writers, naturally enough, don't want to pay more than about £400-£500. So there's the one driver. And you talked about why are we interested in this sort of stuff. One driver is to be able to deconstruct what is a statutory normal ombudsman scheme and say within that, what pieces of activity can we provide, at what price, with what success rate, in order to deal with what type of dispute. And that enables us to offer a range of different potential dispute resolution mechanics in a broader market. Yep. So anything that helps us deconstruct our process and say, yes, we know we do the full traditional ombudsman investigation, ombudsman decision thing, and that costs this, and here's the business process. What else can we do? Because in common with many people in my position at the top of the organisation, laughably, actually, we know surprisingly little about those wedge of complaints. And Margaret, having sat on my board for 6 years, know we've had this conversation. We've got a bunch of complaints that go all the way to Ombudsman's decision, and we know huge amounts about that. And there's a bunch of complaints that are withdrawn, disappear, or, quotes, informally resolved in our language. And what does it say about us that we can't even use the same terms across our profession? I mean, absolutely, if you can get us using the same language for the same stuff, God, that would be fantastic. But we know precious little about that stuff. We don't know when things disappear, whether complainants have just given up, or whether actually, behind our backs, how dare they, the complainant and the lawyer have got together and actually sorted it out for themselves, and nobody has had the grace to tell us what the answer is. That would be outrageous. Nevertheless, we don't know. We don't know the extent to which our investigators, in brokering an agreement, are brokering a really good agreement with the consent of both parties, or are putting the twist on the lawyer stroke the complainant. Yep. So that would be... So my one comment on the answers you coming back from people like me, or what it says in the annual report, if you're asking me to describe what my investigators do, I will give you a guess. Is any of this familiar to any of my chief ombudsman colleagues in the room? But do I know what they're doing? Do I? Hell. Yeah? So actually, it seems to be the mystery is further down the business. And what you get in the annual report, and you have my deepest sympathy in reading 50 annual reports. I mean, I write mine and I don't read it, for God's sake. You know, what that says doesn't necessarily represent the reality. The other driver for me, which makes things particularly interesting, is we're just changing our IT system. And therefore, we're having to reinvent our business process. And of course, what the IT system does is to open out all sorts of interesting opportunities, not just to talk about informal resolution or mediation in the traditional manner, but actually all other types of brokered dispute resolution, which may not involve any human interaction whatsoever, or may change mediation from something which assumes a face-to-face transaction, but actually could be virtual. Mm-hmm. So again, I think my plea in this is, in looking at the sort of range of informal, if I can use those terms, resolution mechanics, could I ask that this is slightly future orientated as well, and you take into account with all of this stuff, not just what we have done and we have been doing in our traditional, I know you said we're relatively young, Richard, but actually we do feel quite middle-aged on one level, I personally do anyway. But, you know, what is the future? What are the future mechanics about to have? Now, if we can get to a position that we have a series of products or tools in our toolbox, and we know what each of them costs and what each of them does, and the relative popularity of those, that's great. But then we get to some profound philosophical questions, and I just want to finish. I'm just looking at Chris. Yeah, you haven't held up any cards yet. I'll keep going till you do. But a very real debate in my business. One of the powers that we have in the Legal Ombudsman is to use, under our scheme rules, scheme rule 5.7, to end a complaint on the basis of a reasonable offer made. Yeah. Now, I've come under a huge amount of pressure from some of my staff to deal with a set of circumstances where a complaint has come in, a lawyer has offered a sum of money to make the complaint go away. The investigator, in the preliminary stages of an investigation, has said, "Oh, that sounds pretty good," and the complainant has resolutely refused to accept it and wants to go all the way to an ombudsman's decision. Now, philosophically, there's a very interesting question there. Whose right is it to choose? We can have all these tools, but we have to sort out who decides which tools can be used. Is it the lawyer, in my case, who will pay? Is it the complainant who may decide, quite inappropriately in everybody else's language, to go all the way to the most expensive resolution style? Or is it us? And we have these three competing pressures, it seems to me. We have the financial and efficiency pressure, which is usually the producer interest pressure. And by producer interest, I don't just mean us, I mean our ultimate paymasters will tend to be the industries that we set up against. We have the customer, the complaint satisfaction pressure. And we have something to do with justice, to which we're meant to be the guardians. And that's the bit that really worries me about all this space in the end. We have one firm that has a large number of complaints, one law firm that has a large number of complaints coming to us. What happens is the complaints come to us, we notify the law firm immediately pays up, and the complainant goes away. The law firm's got off its books without being named and shamed as having an ombudsman finding. And actually, it's cheaper that way than to go through all the business of servicing us in cost-benefit terms. The complainant goes away with a sum of money, which is better than they thought they might get going in. So both parties are happy, and we've got something off our books, very quick, very clean, makes our stats look good. It's really good informal resolution. Everybody's happy. Is that justice? I think there's some profoundly interesting philosophical questions that will follow from this work. Yes, managerially, it will give me a lot more utility, a lot more choices to help build my scheme, to do stuff properly. Fair enough, but it's the second order questions, the philosophical questions that will follow, that I think make this profoundly interesting.